This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Writer Alice Hoffman is my guest in this portion of the program. Her latest book is a collection of stories that take place over the course of 200 years in one setting, a farmhouse on Cape Cod, Blackbird House. The book, Blackbird House, was inspired by her own home on the Cape, a cottage she and her husband bought a few years back. The house and farm were very run down and said to be haunted by the ghost of a little boy who went to sea and returned only in spirit. But Alice Hoffman and her husband fell in love with the place, and that was that. They would make it a home again. In an article about the house for Architectural Digest, Alice Hoffman said that, should the little sailor lost to sea so long ago ever find his way over the dunes and back to this house, we wanted him to feel, above all else, that he had indeed come home. Now to the stories of Blackbird House. The Edge of the World is the first story in this book, and this is how it opens. It was said that boys should go on their first sea voyage at the age of 10, but surely this notion was never put forth by anyone's mother. If the bay were to be raised 1 degree in temperature for every woman who had lost the man or child she loved at sea, the water would have boiled, throwing off steam even in the dead of winter, poaching the bluefish and herrings as they swam. That's the opening of Alice Hoffman's new book, Blackbird House. Alice Hoffman, thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
What was it like imagining the people who lived in what is now your home in Massachusetts?
Well, it's funny. You know, I did a lot of research about my house, and I knew facts, and I knew, you know, what was used to build it, but I really didn't know much about the people. And so I invented this kind of cast of characters of people who had lived in my house. And to tell you the truth, I feel like they're still here.
You know, that's, and they're a wonderful group of characters, and I'm glad that they're still there with you. I wonder, did these stories rush at you, or did they come slowly?
You know, it's a very funny thing the way that happens. I wrote the second to the last story first. That's a very modern story. And then after I wrote it, it's about parents whose daughter is very ill, and at the end of her illness, they decide to buy a house just kind of on a whim, just as kind of a statement of hope in the future. And after I wrote that story, I just decided I wanted to know more about the house, and the stories really did just rush at me, but not consecutively.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, from the very opening of that first story, The Edge of the World, you know, we know that a boy is going to go to sea and he will be lost.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a fear for the boy and his mother, but we also have this desire to hear the story. It is the story of a family, John Hadley and his wife Coral and their two sons, Isaac's orphaned bird. Vincent and Isaac are the two children,
mm-hmm.
the orphaned bird, a blackbird, the house and the love and hope that this house holds. All of that is present in this story, The Edge of the World.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of sorrow in this story, but also there is all that love in the story and hope and survival.
Yeah. I think you're so right. I mean, so many of the stories, especially that one, are filled with sorrow. And when you live in an old house, I mean, part of being here is knowing, you know, other people came before you and that they are now gone. And that you're, you know, you will someday be gone and someone else will be living in this house. And I think, you know, that is very true. There's a lot of sorrow and also a lot of hope.
Yeah, yeah. And all in all, these stories remind me that life is quite wondrous.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny that you'd say that, but I think I wrote that the stories really as a message to myself to remember that even though there's such a tremendous loss and I had suffered several years of very, you know, horrible losses, you know, there is still kind of this ongoing feeling of abundant life.
Yeah. One of the stories that really actually found me gasping for breath, The Token.
Mm.
And it's one of a couple of stories involving Ruth Blackbird Hill.
Yeah.
And the narrator in The Token is one of her daughters, Garnet.
Mm-hmm.
And an outbreak of influenza has killed Ruth's love, Lysander,
yeah.
and the daughter's father. And Ruth is out of her mind with grief.
Yeah.
And a question is posed in this story. What is most precious to you? Boy, good and important question.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's funny. I think that story is really kind of it's kind of a recipe for, you know, what do you do when you're just overwhelmed with grief? How do you come back to life? And just what you said, you know, the thing that brings you back to life is whatever is most important to you. And, you know, none of the characters in the story, including the little girl, knows what the answer to that is until the very, very end of the story when she realizes that she's the most important thing to her mother.
Mm. In the first story, back to the first story, when Coral and John move into their house, this is the house that John Hadley has built for his wife, a labor of love, they feel, this is how you put it, quite suddenly as though time was unlimited, that it was among the things that would never be in short supply.
Mm.
You know, what is most precious to you? How long will we be together? Were these questions that literally were with you as you wrote these stories?
You know, I think often for me, I don't really know what the question is until I write the book. And then when I finish the book, I think, oh, well, that's what I wanted to know. That's the answer to what I needed to know. Because I always think that, you know, I'm two different people. I'm the regular person that I am, and then I'm the writer, and I feel that the writer is much smarter than the regular person. So I think I kind of pose these questions for myself to see if I can answer them. And I think that was the question I was asking. You know, how do you survive grief? How do you live in a world that is filled with sorrow?
Hmm. In this book, there's the blackbird that returns home when his master cannot.
Mm-hmm.
There's a giant fish that, it seems to me, and maybe I've misread this, that at once saves a man's life, also at the same time taking his leg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, these stories seem, on the one hand, so fabulous, but on the other hand, don't we all have those moments of, you know, when you say to yourself, well, I'll be damned.
You know, I always think that, you know, great, great grief comes right alongside with, you know, great joy. They always seem like kind of braided together. A good thing happens and a terrible thing happens. You have good and you have evil. You have loss and you have survival. I mean, it seems to me that they're always come hand in hand.
Hmm. I think it's maybe like being at a visitation after someone has died, and there are tears and laughter.
Right, exactly.
At the same time.
Exactly.
You wrote a piece for the New York Times column, The Writing Life, a few months back.
Mm-hmm.
And you wrote about the power of fairy tales.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned your grandmother.
Yeah.
What kind of stories did she tell you?
Well, she told me they seemed like very fantastic stories. She grew up in Russia in a very little village, kind of a nameless village. She couldn't seem to remember the name. But in her village, there were wolves that howled all the time, and there was a river that froze all year round. And there were men who would go to work on the river and return, you know, 8 months later. And it was just such a fantastic world. And we would walk down the streets of the Bronx or Manhattan, and she would tell me these stories, and they just seemed like a fairy tale from so long ago, and yet they were her life. And I think it kind of, to me, set in motion this feeling of the fairy tale world and our world are not so different.
Yeah. The title that the Post put on this, excuse me, it wasn't the New York Times, it was the Washington Post.
Yes.
Forgive me for that.
That's okay.
Sharpening an imagination with the hard flint of a fairy tale.
Yes.
And one of the things that you say here is, for me, there was no examined life without an imagined life.
Well, I think that's really true. And, you know, the interesting thing about fairy tales in terms of being a hard flint is, you know, they're not sentimental. They can be gruesome. They are hard, and they are emotionally raw. And I think they feel so true and so real that, for me, you know, they seemed almost like a realer examination of life than our daily waking life.
Hmm. It's all boiled down and very intense with all kinds of symbolism.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, in this book, Blackbird House, we feel the brush of history, and sometimes it's a gentle brush, and sometimes it's brutal. And the first story takes place at the outset of our history, British occupation and blockade.
Mm-hmm.
Another story is set during the Civil War.
Others
in the wars of the 20th century.
Yeah.
Have these stories and living in that house on Cape Cod given you a new perspective on history and its place within our lives?
Well, I think it does. I think living in an old house does do that. You just feel that, you know, you feel kind of the blocks of history that have built up to this moment. And I think I didn't really realize when I was writing the book how much I was writing about war and what happens on the domestic front during a war, what happens to the women who are left at home and the children who are left at home.
Hmm. Another thing that comes clearly through these stories is the importance of community.
Yeah.
As a lifeline.
Oh, definitely. You know, I think, you know, writing about a small town and a town where everybody knows your business and, you know, the good of that and the bad of that, you know, it's so much more, you are so much more a person, you know, within a group of people than being some anonymous creature in some modern city. And I think there is, you know, that feeling that, you know, we all kind of want that kind of community.
Mm. When you were doing the research for the book, were there stories of community that you ran across where people reached out to one another in times of need?
Time and time again, there were stories, especially during times of loss. And it seemed to me that there were times, especially, you know, early on, when there would be a lot of loss together, you know, a lot of men lost at sea during the same storm, where people would grieve together. There would be storms that would affect everyone. And, you know, it was kind of a shared experience for people, especially, you know, on Cape Cod, so far away, so far out in the ocean.
Mm. We've got to wrap up here, unfortunately. So tell me, is there a pear tree in your yard?
You know, there's not, but maybe someday I'll plant one.
Oh, I think you better send your husband out.
I think I will.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Oh, take care.
Take care.
Alice Hoffman has been my guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. Look for her new book, Blackbird House. It's published by Doubleday.